And our guest this hour, Varla Ventura, we're talking about her work, the latest one, Beyond Bizarre. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with some of your bizarre stories, so get ready for that. Well, get ready for your phone calls with Varla Ventura. Varla, tell us about the vampire squid.
Ah, the deep sea Dracula.
Yes.
That's a squid that lives in the very, very bottom of the ocean, and it has almost no actual coloring to it. It's rather translucent. The name, the Latin name is Vamprotuthis infernalis, which actually literally translates to vampire squid from hell. It's about 6 inches and lives pretty, like I said, pretty deep. And it actually does this incredible thing where it turns itself inside and looks, it's called pumpkining, and actually looks like a pumpkin when it turns itself inside. It's a way to protect itself. And it's actually quite harmless. It's just that it's pale and then can get these like flashes of red blood, and it has these phosphorescent marks on it that look like a series of eyes, but there, it's actually just a way to kind of seem scarier than it is to ward off predators.
All right, to the phones we go. We'll go to Pat in Santa Fe. Let's go. There you go, Pat. You're up with us.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I don't know. Maybe y'all have heard about it. It's a man and is a doctor years and years ago. And the Keys, this girl's parents died from tuberculosis, and she came down with it. And they say that she was a beautiful girl, and he fell in love with her. Well, she died, and he built a mausoleum for her. And after the funeral, when everybody was gone, he went and got her and lived with her for quite some time. And when the flesh started falling off, he put wax on her face. Well, her sister started having dreams. And so they went to the mausoleum, and she wasn't there. And so they they arrested him.
I guess so. Did you ever hear of that one, Varla?
I have not. That is exactly like what we were talking about, with what drives someone to live with a doll.
Thanks for that story, Pat. Man, there are all kinds of stories like that.
Oh, it's a great story, Pat. Thank you.
Did you ever cover any UFO stories in your works?
I had some stuff about conspiracies and things like that, but I had an interesting like follow up to a UFO encounter when I was a teenager. Sorry, Mom, but I was with a boy making out up on this. High viewpoint up on the top of the hill outside of the town, and we were just kind of, you know, hanging out, making out, looking out at the view, and we saw these lights, and they seemed like they were coming right at us, but directly, but then they would stop, and then it almost seemed like when they noticed that we noticed, they hovered, they were red, and they were white, And I remember it very vividly. Maybe I'm not describing it that well, but about a year and a half ago, the same guy who I'm still occasionally in touch with sent me a video, and it said, you know, it basically the subject was like, you're going to freak out when you see this. And when I watched it, it was a video from someone else from a different part of the Sierra Nevadas, and it was the exact same light. So I thought that was pretty, that really kind of made me, I did freak out a bit because it made me think, oh, I wasn't just kind of, you know, teenage imaginings. It was something, when I saw it, I remembered it all so clearly.
It was real. Mike in Van Marcos, Texas, you're up with us. Go ahead, Michael.
I just wanted to relate a story about when I left the Navy, I was staying with my parents in Downey, California.
Mm-hmm.
And, while I was there, I was with my fiance, and she was watching the outside of the windows, and I was watching the inside. And then I went into the kitchen, and she came in from the outside. And just as I went into the kitchen, I thought I saw somebody over my shoulder out of the corner of my eye. It kind of startled me, so I turned around and looked, but nobody was there. But I turned back, and on the counter was a strand of long black hair.
Oh.
Strange. Because my fiance was a redhead. So I knew it wasn't her. My mom was a blonde. So I picked this thing up. I looked at it. And I just, for some reason, I put it into a napkin and kind of folded it up, put it in my pocket. My fiance came into the kitchen. I said, hey, take a look at this thing, this hair I found on the counter. And I took the napkin out of my pocket, took the hair out, and showed it to her. And she reached to take it, and I let go of it. At the same time she reached for it, it disappeared.
Wow.
What do you mean it disappeared?
I looked at her. We looked all over the kitchen, couldn't find it. My mom at the time was a legal secretary, and she was taking a course in court stenography. And you know, with the little machine, they've got that tape that just goes on forever.
Right.
Yeah, she'd had her little machine and a tape that she had been working on kind of folded up on a TV tray, dinner tray. And they came back from shopping one day, and something had taken the tape off the table and just tossed it like it was, you know, tossed up in the air like confetti. And it was just strewn all over the place.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and unquestioned. Actually, I went back to the Air Force a little bit later, and they called the mother of a high school sweetheart, and she was a practicing white witch. She came over and did an exorcism, and there was no more door rattlings or hair showing up or any of the other problems that they had experienced there.
That cleaned it up. Why do you think, Varla, so many strange stories are out there? I mean, they're all real. Why do they occur?
Well, I think that, you know, there's something kind of constantly trying to let us know that there's more than what we see. And I think it's a way for us to sort of recognize that there's something more than, you know, the paper in our hands and the cars we drive, that there's another realm. And I know your listeners are very in tune with that.
You think it's, you know, this other realm, you know, almost like another dimension?
I think there's a lot of that, especially in the kinds of stories with, you know, the one like that Mike just shared. And I also think that there's a lot of just sort of strange behavior that happens when you have a lot of people living in a kind of set environment. So you get the guy who chopped his leg off and puts it in a smoker, and to him it seems normal. Now, I don't know that's paranormal, except for that it's not normal.
It's not normal. It doesn't have to be paranormal. What about the story? You've got some brain stories in your book.
Right. Okay. Well, one of the stories is the one about the woman with the tumor that actually turned out to be a worm. And the other one is this story that's a little bit sweet for a gruesome story. There was a newborn who looked like the newborn was born with a mass in their head. And when the doctors went to operate and remove what they thought was a tumor, it was actually a fully formed infant foot. And it was part of that, the twin of the fetus. And apparently that happens upon occasion. There'll be an unformed little bit here and there that might mm-hmm. be attached to a newborn that was originally part of a twin cell. But in this case, it was one of the rare cases where the foot was fully formed, and it had just worked its way into the brain of the poor baby. But the baby did, the surgery was successful, and the baby survived.
Well, let's go to Kay in Ohio, east of the Rockies. There you go, Kay. You're up. Hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Varla.
Hi.
I'm telling a story. It happened in my parents' house. And I've never shared it with anybody outside of the family or a few close friends. I'm a little nervous about it. I was sitting talking to my mom one day, and I turned my head to look at her and jerked back to look back at the wall above her couch. And there is a image of Jesus And we're a Christian family. I hear about these things, and people go nuts over this kind of stuff, and that's why I don't want anyone to really know about it. But it's very clear. It almost looks like a negative. It's about 2.5 feet tall by about 2 feet wide. It's been there about 3 years now. And it's it's the few people who showed it to, it just gives you chills. It's very spooky.
So it appeared, what? And then it never went away?
It never went away. It's still there.
And it appeared just sort of suddenly.
Yeah. We had some pillows that had like a black backing on them. And we would sit them on top of the couch, lean them against the wall, and they would make like these faint black smudges on the wall. So we stopped putting them up there. And it was after that that this suddenly, one day I looked up and there it was. And it's so clear. You can see the horns, the thorns, and the crown, his eyes, his hair, his nose and lips and everything.
Have other people seen this too, Kay?
Yes, a few.
And they say the same thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I sent you a picture of it, it would give you chills.
Yeah, do it. I'd like to see it. We'll post it on the website. Thanks. You get a lot of stories like that, Varla, don't you? These kind of religious, somewhat spiritual apparitions, pictures.
Yeah. There's quite a few out there, and there was in the town of Calexico, there was not an actual piece of food. It was the griddle that. Like some pancakes were cooked on, and the griddle actually, when one of the cooks was going to clean it, they noticed the image of the Virgin Mary was in the sort of remaining grease, and so they actually took it out and made a little shrine on the back of the, in a shed sort of in the back of the restaurant, and made a shrine to it, and people come and visit it. Good
Next
for
up.
Business.
It is good for business. Bangor, Maine, we go. First time caller, Adam's with us. Go ahead, Adam.
Read it. Look something small.
Adam?
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's
I was
right.
talking to my uncle. I was just picking him up. Yeah, I have a few questions about. Do you guys ever heard of the Witch's Foot in Bucksport, Maine?
I have not. How about you, Varla?
No.
Tell us about
it. Okay, well, in Bucksport, Maine, there's a guy named Colonel Buck. And what happened, he burned this witch at the stake, and what happened was that she put a curse on Colonel Buck, and there was a big foot that was on his gravestone, and they wiped it off, and they even replaced the stone, and it kept on returning back.
Wow.
So, right in Bucksport, Maine. You might be able to read a little bit about it or find out about it, but it's pretty crazy. My grandfather's father, I think, replaced a stone there, and it's true. It keeps on coming back, and they washed it off many, many times. And the witch cursed them, and ever since then, there's a heart, too, up top of the stone. So,
is it a stain that kind of appears on the stone?
Yeah, it appeared on the stone, and it happens. Like, it's basically there. But basically what I was talking about was stuff reappearing and disappearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. There's been a lot of times where I looked for a fan one time and it was there. Then I went back to look for it, and then it wasn't. Well, actually, I went to look for it, and it wasn't there. Then when I went to look for it, it was there. It just reappears. And one time we were playing pool, and the pool ball, we went to return the pool balls, and the last ball that we were looking for was a white ball. And we all looked for it, and we couldn't find it. And then when we all went around again, it just appeared there. So just weird stuff like that's been happening in my life, basically.
That's
basically great. It.
All right. Thanks, Adam. What do you think of curses, Varla? Do you come across many stories like that where people have been cursed and things happen to them?
Yeah. There's a lot of that in organized sports, baseball. There's the Comiskey curse of the Boston Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And, they even have they had a whole sort of anti-hex night there and had witches come out on the pitcher's mound and kind of de-curse the place. But I think it's interesting the stuff appearing and reappearing, because that's actually often, now I don't know if this is all happening in the same place for him or, but that's often, I've heard that quite frequently in stories of the paranormal, I'm sure you have as well, George, where an object will be moved and it'll just be moved a little bit, and then eventually it'll be moved to a point where you can't explain why it's moved. You know, you find something out of place completely, like, you know, up on a shelf that's not supposed to be there, you know, your toothpaste or something that you couldn't find. And a couple times you hear those things and you can kind of say, oh, I was spaced out or I wasn't paying attention. But when it keeps happening, especially if it's in a particular, you know, I've been in a couple of apartments where things like that have happened. So.
All right, let's go to Rancho Mirage, California. Kelly's there, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hi, I have a really, really strange story.
All right.
This happened in, like, in 1976, and I was working, long story, but I decided to go with a friend, and we were working at the State Fair in Phoenix, Arizona. And I got a room, like, around the corner, and one night, now, there was a rumor that among the guys that were working the rides, you know, the really bad guys, the carnies, there was a rumor that there was some bad speed, bad amphetamines going around. Somebody was selling bad stuff and people were getting sick. So there was a rumor that they were looking for this person, right? So one night after work, some friends of mine said, hey, we're going to go around the corner to this bar and we're going to shoot some pool and have a few drinks. And they asked me if I would come, and I go, yeah. So I went to my room and got cleaned up, and I'm walking across the street. And as I got across the street on Grand Avenue, I look down the sidewalk, so I'm stepping up from the curb, and I see the image of man, and he's dead. But it's like a premonition, like a mirage. I can see right through him. And he's like 60-ish years old, and he's got, this is horrible, he had a pipe in a certain orifice, and there was blood going into the gutter. It was really, really gross and creepy. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, and I thought it was real. And I heard this voice telling me, walk through it. It's what you're looking at isn't there. Just, it's okay. Just walk through it and go. So after a few minutes, I stood there rubbing my eyes, and I, you know, walked through it. And I got to the end of the street, and I turned around, and the image was gone. It just, you know, like, faded. And these old people were walking towards me, and they're looking at me like I was really weird because they didn't know what I saw. So I'm like, oh, my God, you know, and I go around the corner, walk into this bar, and it totally screwed up my whole night. So I walk in the bar, and I'm like, I go up to the bar, and these two guys, I didn't even know them. I, you know, had seen them at work before, but didn't know them that well. And I ordered a beer, but I wasn't really in the mood to have anything to drink. And so they go, oh, you know, I started to tell them what I saw, and they go, oh, just have a drink, you'll feel better. So about 15, 20 minutes later, I decided, I need to go back to my room. I'm just not feeling it, you know. So these two guys said, hey, if you're leaving, we'll give you a ride back to your room. And they worked at the State Fair, so I guess I should have been worried, but I wasn't. They dropped me off in front of my, yeah, I should have been, but nothing happened, thank God. So anyway, they dropped me off in front of my room on the street, and they just took off. Well, the next morning I go to work, and I'm, you know, at the State Fair, and I'm at the trailer where they're serving breakfast, and I ordered some coffee. The lady goes, did you hear about the guy that was killed?
Oh.
And I said, what? And they go, yeah, this guy was killed right around the corner. And I go, wait. Just so that I, you know, I said, was he an old man, and he had a pipe sticking out of him, and he died right in front of the Golden Eagle. It was a biker bar, but that wasn't the bar that I was going to. And she goes, yeah, how did you know? And I just went, I felt like I was going to faint.
Yeah, and, well, you did, too. We'll be back in a moment. Varla, does anything scare you?
Well, some of that stuff about the show that you're going to have on Saturday night with the sudden tsunamis and things like that. I do have kind of a couple
of... natural things scare you.
So, yeah, more natural things, definitely more natural things. Supernatural things, not so much. But things of that nature, and then, you know, sort of the behavior of humans can kind of freak me out.
All right, let's go to Portland, Oregon. Shane on the wildcard line is with us. Hi, Shane, go ahead.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Varla. Fantastic show as usual. How are you guys doing?
Good, Shane.
Hey, thanks.
I wanted to, speaking of things that are of the natural world, a call that relates to ESP, but in the animal realm. I was wondering if you guys are familiar with this urban legend, a story from down in Mexico. There was a bay, and there would be lots of tourists visiting to swim with dolphins and have that nice experience of connecting with our cousins who live in the ocean. And there was one dolphin who would swim and butt people repeatedly. And in more than one case, it turned out that the dolphin was alerting people to cancer that was inside of their body. And
wow.
Several confirmed stories of people getting treatment and later realizing that the dolphin had in fact been trying to indicate to them this illness that was within them.
That's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. Just fantastic stuff. And it relates to kind of, an awareness that if we could relate to that more aware animal side of ourselves, perhaps we could enhance our lives in many ways.
That's a great story, Shane. That's worthy of doing a show.
Have you guys heard of that at all?
I've heard of like dogs sensing cancer, but I've never heard of dolphins, singling out people.
Yeah, I haven't heard of the dolphin. I did hear also about a cat that would always sort of portend death or some sort of deadly illness, and it would sit on the lap of someone at a funeral home.
Yes.
Or not a funeral home, I'm sorry, an old folks home,
yes.
Retirement home.
We had the doctor on. This cat, and then the person would die.
That would be a great show, just like Animal ESP.
Super. All right, thanks, Shane. We're going to follow
Thank
up
you.
On that. And I wonder if the dolphin was doing it to try to alert the person so they could fight this cancer, or whether he just sensed something was wrong and just hit that spot. I don't know. I tend to think maybe the dolphin wanted to alert the human.
Yeah, like the dog that, diagnosed the woman who had breast cancer, like, months before she had ever had any doctor diagnose it. He kept hitting her chest and she didn't know why. And then actually when it came back, the dog started doing the same thing a few years later after she had had treatment. It came back. And when the dog did it that time, she went to the doctor and they were able to treat it again in time before it got too extreme.
Just in New York City a few days ago, and we're going right back now with Elena. There you go. Hi.
Hi. So I have a New York City story, and this is more along the lines of the person with the doll. It's not paranormal, but this is a homeless guy with a puppet.
Okay.
And he was going through the garbage. He had one of these monkey puppets that has really long arms and legs, long skinny arms and legs that wrap around his own body. He had the arms and legs wrapped around his body, but then he had his hand in the puppet, and he was having the puppet go through a garbage can on a street corner. And the whole while the puppet was going through the garbage, pulling stuff out of the garbage, the guy was yelling at the puppet saying, "Stop that! Stop that! That's bad! That's dirty! Stop that!" And meanwhile, the monkey's pulling all this stuff out of the trash and stuffing it in the guy's knapsack.
Wow.
And the guy was like totally oblivious to me or anybody else. He was totally focused on the puppet and the garbage. And this was not a performance. This was just him and the monkey.
I love it. That's funny.
Yeah, that was fun.
That's great.
All right. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Next up, Springfield, Missouri. First time caller James is up on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, James.
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Well, listen, I'll take you back to the paranormal real quick. 4 hours south of you, George. There's a theater that my son, teenage son, and I got, and a couple others got permission to do an investigation, although I didn't really believe in this stuff. But we took recorders and video and all that junk, and they did this almost overnight. Got home, didn't really mess with it. Nothing happened that night. Started listening to the digital recorders and heard some stuff. It was kind of interesting. Couldn't make it out, so I downloaded audio software. This took 2 months for me to figure out how to transfer, onto my computer. When I was able to amplify these noises, and that's all I did, I have over 30 EVPs of some of the clearest things, and what the ones that really freaked me out are when we kind of were joking around because we thought nothing, that there was nothing there. And I mean, I'm somewhat of a skeptic, and I had said some things that maybe weren't too nice to the potential spirit. And there's a voice very clearly, one voice that says, "Turn around, it's not scary." And then you hear the sound of a rope swinging. And immediately after that, another voice says, "Look behind you, punk," and it's as clear as day. And I have 27 other EVPs on this that are clear as day. I mean, I'm astounded. I asked my son recently if he wanted to go do something like that again, and he said, why? I go, what do you mean? He goes, Dad, I know. And, you know, it's true. I know now. And I really don't have a need to do that. But it still astounds me, even when I think about those EVPs on my computer.
That is. You got to get those to me, James. As we get close to Halloween, we'll play a few, if that's okay.
I'll be glad. Yeah, I'll email them to you. Definitely.
Okay.
I'll do it.
George at coasttocoastam.com. Love to hear them. Thanks. Rick in Tucson, Arizona, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Rick.
Yes, thanks, George. Talked to several teams. It's called Tulum, Mexico, where the dolphins come right up to you, and they actually use their sonar to go right into you, and they find places in your body that aren't correct, that are out of balance, and then they poke you there. So it's very, very real.
Why do you think they poke you there? Are they trying to alert you, or do they just do that because they sense there's something wrong?
Yeah, they do that in their own species, too. If there's something wrong, they help each other notify that there's something there. So it's an alert system. So, but let's go back to the maggots. You started off with medical maggots.
Yeah.
Could they possibly do that? George, for 32 years, we've had a biocontrol company here in Tucson, Arizona, called Arbico. We grow maggots to produce a biocontrol agent to control flies for Churchill Downs and Santa Anita, places all over the country. These same medical maggots are used in hospitals. We've trained them. They actually grow the maggots in a hospital, put them in alcohol, and then they gauze tape 10 of these little maggots, these little wonderful human, these nature creatures from God, really, and they actually go in and eat all of the decomposing flesh, and then they go in and remove them 24 to 48 hours later. So it's if you could just take a deep breath, and accept the fact that these maggots are here to help, George, not and Marla. They really are real. We've consulted and trained doctors and hospitals for 30 years how to do this. So it's for real. You know, we've been mass rearing maggots here at Arbico. We should talk. We've been doing biocontrol so that people can choose alternatives other than chemicals for their backyard, their gardens, so that you can have a biocontrol insect, you know, a beneficial insect like ladybugs, praying mantis. And these are tiny little fly parasites that we produce by growing the maggots.
Rick, let's do an hour on that. Email me. I'll get it with my producers, and we'll set something up.
Good, good. We actually have a garden show every Sunday morning where we teach people how to do easy organic gardening. I'll show you that email, that garden show every morning, every Sunday morning. And we'll connect, and we'll talk to people about how they can get off chemicals and do beneficial insects and save the planet.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it. Thank you, Marla.
Thank you.
All right. Isn't it amazing what critters can do, Varla?
Yeah, really. There's research going on in Texas where they're using maggots actually to lay eggs inside the brains of the fire ants that are
it
such
still
a problem
gives
down
me,
there.
It gives me the willies just thinking about it.
And then they just kind of, the maggots hatch inside the brains of these ants, and they turn the little ants into zombies, and then eventually they just sort of, you know, they die, and then the maggots move on to the next batch of fire ants.
If you had an infection and you were treated with antibiotics and they didn't work, and they came up to you and said, all right, this 2-inch gash you have in your arm, we're going to load them up with maggots and we'll take them out in a day or two. Would you let them do that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You would?
Of course. And I'd probably document the whole thing.
They're eating away at you and you'd let them do that?
Well, think of what
I've got people now by the millions cringing in bed, cringing in their cars.
Hey, it's not my first choice, but I would do it. I would do it. I'm open.
Would you ever eat a bowl full of maggots?
Probably not.
If you were hungry, out stuck in the woods, and there was a pile of maggots and you needed to eat, would you?
And there's no berries, and there's no bark,
there's nothing
I can eat.
Nothing. You're starving. You're dying. Would you?
I guess. Oh, you wouldn't?
Oh, gosh. I hope I'm never in that situation.
Oh, yeah, Can I answer that too? I don't ever want to be in that position. I want to always have a power bar in my back pocket.
At least a couple. Let's go to Rosemead, California. Rosalie, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Rosalie.
Hi. I'm very interested in Marla. Marla, what is your last name?
Ventura.
Ventura. Okay, well, you know what? Well, let's talk about the paranormal. All my life, I know that I know there's something more, because everyone that has passed over in my family, I still hear from them. And I still, I know that God is so wonderful. But when you're ill and you have, say, maybe you're going for a serious surgery, all your family comes. And if people would pay attention, your family that's passed over, your mother, your cousins, your mother-in-laws, your father-in-laws, they come, because I had breast cancer in both breasts. And just before the surgery, I had everyone that passed over in my life come in a dream, and I made them to eat, and they sat and talked to me. Now, just before I had the surgery on a Saturday night, I had to go in on a Monday, I dreamt of this man who sat in my living room talking to me how wonderful family was, and that I needed to know that. And I sat there looking at the man in my dream, and I said, yes, I know how wonderful family is, but you know who you are? You're John Kennedy Jr. And with that, he smiled and he left. I went to church the next day, and the sermon was on how important family was. So when I went and I had the surgery, I knew my aunt, the one who had the breast cancer, she was there when I was going through all of this. She was there. I felt her, because she used to tell her son, Jimmy, Jimmy, Jimmy. And that's what I heard. And all through my life, I wanted to know. When I was 18 years old, I went to a priest and asked him, please, I want to know about my grandfather. And he said, you have to be stable in this life before you can start wanting to know about another life. Well, and I just started reading and reading on all this. But everyone that's passed away, one of my brothers that passed away, and he was passing, he had agreed to get well. He had cirrhosis of the liver, failing kidneys, and he had agreed to get well when I found him in the emergency room. I told him, you got to fight, Chris, because then I'm going to bring you home. And he said yes, because they already had inserted this tube in his throat. So he had lingered for 10 days. His liver was no good. The kidneys were no good. He had his family come and see him. They hadn't seen him in years. And finally, the nurse says, he should have really died already. And I remember I told him, you got to fight. And he nodded. So I knew he was going to be on dialysis, and he didn't want to ever. And I told him the day he was in the hospital, the tenth day, I says, Chris, let me tell you what's wrong with you. I said, you don't have anything anymore. You're going to be a vegetable. You got to go to the light. You got to go see my dad. You got to go see Grammy and everybody that's waiting for you. Well, the nurse came in, and she said, oh, look at the shades up. Let's put the shade down, because the sun was on him.
Yeah.
And the shade went back up. And she pulled it down again, and it went back up. And she goes, oh, I guess he wants it up. They know about all of this. So anyway, I went to the bathroom. I says, Chris, you just got to go. I'll take care of everything for you. I'll give you a nice funeral. As I was leaving to the bathroom, my other family was coming in. And they called me. They says, come on, he's leaving. So I ran over there. I grabbed a hold of my brother's hand, and I told him, you go. And they started praying the rosary, and I said, you go. Everything's going to be fine. Well, when he died, one of my brothers didn't get to see him, didn't come in time. So we were outside while they were cleaning him up, and my brother comes running, and he says, I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I started acting in such a peculiar way, because he was holding my hand, my brother. And I started playing around with him like my brother. And my sister-in-law said, Rosalie, you're acting like Chris. I says, I know. I go, he waited to see you, Vince, and it was gone. And a lot of them like that, and it's nice. Birthdays, I always say happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. And either a sign comes up, a song that they sang, and I know that they hear.
Oh, there's no doubt, Rosalie, that it exists on the other side. Did you come across, Varla, any of those kind of stories, afterlife stories?
Oh, definitely. Visitations when, you know, a loved one has passed on, especially with children. You know, in fact, something like that happened to me when I was a child, seeing a grandparent. And there was a story in the first book of a woman who woke up and her grandfather was like at the bottom of the stairs. And he came upstairs and came and visited her. It was sort of the middle of the night. And she was so young, she knew he was in the hospital, but to her it seemed normal that he was there. And the next morning when she got up, she went down to tell her mom that, you know, he had visited and everything was good. He wasn't in the hospital anymore. And he, of course, had passed away in the middle of the night that night and had come to visit her and say goodbye. So, and I expect that nurses and hospitals have some pretty incredible stories as well about things that they've witnessed and experienced.
Well, let me tell you something. It's a remarkable work, both your works, actually, Beyond Bizarre and the other one, The Book of the Bizarre. Where do you get your books?
They're available anywhere books are sold. You can go to the publisher's website, and that's redwheelweiser.com. It's redwheel, W-E-I-S-E-R.com. There should be links, and I know there's links on the Coast to Coast website. If you have any trouble finding my book, you know, your local bookstore should either carry it or be able to order it easily. You can always email me at varlaventura@gmail.com and tell me that you're looking for the book, and I can figure out how to get a copy to you.
Great. Have a great weekend and have fun on Halloween, Varla.
Thank you, George. Have a wonderful October, and thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. And I'll be back in a moment with Open Lines, a special Sleepwalker hotline. And if you want to continue with your bizarre stories, just check in. We'll be back.